Good morning. If you'd go ahead and open your Bible, I'd ask you to open it to 2 Timothy chapter 3. We're going to begin there this morning. Last week, I had, in our preaching through 1 Corinthians, I had preached through 1 Corinthians 13, the whole chapter. And being gone the next 2 weeks, I just did not want to break up chapter 14. So what I ended up doing is I went back and I was reading through chapter 13 again. I found just something that we struggle with in our love, and that's the idea that love does not seek its own. And I thought, you know, just calling attention to that there out of 1 Corinthians 13, not trying to say the rest aren't important, but it's just one we just need to focus in on, that love doesn't seek its own. Love is not self-seeking. And we need to know that. The church at Corinth, and even the church today, that's the problem within the church. There's too much self-seeking. Love doesn't do that. And when people are self-seeking, self-serving, it destroys any spiritual advancement. And we have to be aware of that. It takes away. The lack of love robs people. And so we need to get better at learning how not to be self-seekers. When we talk about the love of God, and I went through this in detail last week, but when we talk about the love of God, the love there is a love of sacrifice. It's a love that you choose for another person, not anything to do with how you feel. It is natural for us to seek our own benefits. It's natural for us to seek what we want. You see it in children real plain. You know, that toy they pick up and take it away from another child. That's mine. What do you have to train the children in? You need to learn how to share. You know what you're doing? You're teaching them how to love, that love does not seek its own. What happens is that those children become adults, and it just gets ingrained even more. And so within the church, we find people, this is what I want, this is not what I want. And we get selfish, we get disgruntled because things are not done the way we think they ought to be done. That's not love. That's not love's way. And that's not what God wants us to do. You know, God, Jesus Christ, they're not self-seekers. They've never been self-seekers. They gave as a sacrifice. Heaven sacrificed everything for our well-being. And God is calling upon the church individually, that we be a people that do not seek our own, but for the benefit of everyone else. I was reading an article this week, and there's a fellow, he's the leading psychologist, one of the leading psychologists in our nation. And this is what he said, and I jotted it down because I thought it was worthwhile. He said, we must learn to love yourself. By accepting yourself, before you can learn to accept and love others. And people buy into it. There's a fellow who does a lot of TV preaching. And one of his lessons, he said, self-love is the secret to loving others. And why do we buy that stuff? Because it feeds my natural desires. Learn how to love yourself by accept yourself first, and then you can learn to accept and love others. Why, that's exactly what I want to do. I mean, you got to learn how to love yourself first. That's the secret to loving others. That's exactly what I want to do. And it's the opposite of God. But everybody falls into it because it's natural. But it goes completely against God's love and God's nature, even though it sounds good to man. Now, in 2 Timothy chapter 3, I want you to see that Timothy, Paul points Timothy that there's going to be difficult times coming in the church. There's going to be some hard things, and there's going to be a reason why things get difficult within the church. Look at verse 1. But realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come. And he's talking about the church. Verse 2. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy. I want to stop with that. I don't even need to go any further because this morning we're talking about love does not seek its own. And I want you to notice there the first thing. Why is it going to be grievous? Why are there going to be grievous times? Why are brethren going to create difficulties within the church? For men will be lovers of self. That's what's going to make it difficult. Lovers of self. In fact, in verse 2, he also brings in there boastful and he brings up arrogant. Three things, 1 Corinthians 13, speaking about love, three things that he says are not love. Love does not seek its own. Love is not boastful, and love is not arrogant. Within the church, guess what some people are going to become? Boastful, arrogant, and they're going to seek their own. They're going to love themselves. And it's going to make hard things that to try to reach out. Look at verse 5 of chapter 3. He's speaking to these people, holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. You know what they're holding to? Lovers of self, those that are boastful, those that are arrogant, and all the other things that are going on. You know, guess what? They have a form of godliness. There's a semblance, it looks like it's religious. There's a semblance, it looks like they're from God. But you know what the problem is? He said, although they have denied its power. There is no power for them to be godly because they love themselves. The power of love, the power of God, is when you don't love yourself, when you choose not to do that. Love doesn't do that. 1 Corinthians 13:8, love never fails. You know, we need to get better at loving. We need to get better at choosing instead of what's in it for me, instead of why is this for me, what am I going to gain out of this? It needs to be what is the benefit for you. How is this going to help my brothers and sisters rather than not about me? Self-seekers are destroying and will destroy the progress we're trying to make within the body of Christ. Self-seeking people destroy anything spiritual. And that's what happened at the church at Corinth. And that has not changed since the writing of these letters. Well, it's the opposite of God and Christ. I want you to come back to Isaiah with me, please. Isaiah chapter 53. We see in the church what happened there in 2 Timothy, what Paul said would happen. But I want to come back to Isaiah 53. This is about the life of Jesus. The prophet Isaiah prophesies the kind of man he is, or he will be there in the future. And yet we saw that this is the kind of man he is as we read in the New Testament. In Isaiah chapter 53, look at verse 4. He says, surely our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried. I want you to see two words. First, bore. Second, carried. That's what love to sacrifice for others does. It says, our griefs, he himself. Jesus was concerned about the sin-sick souls of man. And so you know what he said? I love. I will bear the sin-sick soul. In fact, he said, the sorrows that have been caused from man's sins, and you and I know well that whenever we practice sin or we do something sinful, it causes great sorrow, not only to us, but to those we sin against. And Jesus said, I will carry those. Now, look at the rest of the verse. Look at the rest of the verse, how man saw Jesus. Yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. They could not appreciate, man does not appreciate Jesus bearing and carrying, much less understand what he's doing. They didn't esteem him in any way. They saw him as stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. Poor guy. If the guy would have been right with his father that he claims as his father, he sure wouldn't be going through all of these things. And Jesus is going, your griefs, I'll bear them. Your sorrows, I'll carry. And man says, oh, so what? You must be cursed of God. Man can't see things for the value if we're not willing to walk in God's world. Look at verse 5. But he was pierced through for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. He was pierced for our transgressions. Jesus was not pierced for his, for he had no transgressions. Jesus never transgressed the rights of another. But you know what he allowed? You know what he took? He took a piercing for you and for me. It was my transgressions, not his. And he said, he was crushed for our iniquities. You know what? We're the only ones to blame. Every sin that I have ever committed was my choice. Everything you have ever done was your choice. And yet he chose to be crushed. I mean, he had the life squashed right out of him because of my guilt. We're looking at love and the choice of love. Verse 5, he says, but he was pierced through for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The chastening of our well-being fell upon him, and by his scourging we are healed. You know what? Our well-being is going to depend on what he went through. You know, when you love people, sometimes you pay a price for their well-being. Sometimes it costs you for their well-being. And it took Jesus to be scourged just to heal mankind, to bring them to God. You know, if Jesus never sinned and he didn't, why would you involve yourself with us? You ever thought about that? Why would you even involve your life with us? He lived 33 years on this earth, never did one thing wrong, never caused anybody any harm, only did good, and yet he does all of this because of love, because he chose our betterment. And he let everything fall on him. He bore the whole thing. He carried the whole thing. He was pierced for the whole thing. He was crushed for the whole thing. Everything that we're going to benefit, every gain that we have, is the benefit of Jesus choosing to love. And why would he do it? That I'll never understand. I'll just tell you. Because he never did wrong, yet he got involved. That's love not seeking its own. Look at verse 6. All of us like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. There's a good picture of man. That's self-seeking. Look at there. All of us, like sheep, we've gone astray. We've turned to his own way. Everybody does their own thing. Everybody's busy doing their own thing. People are hustling and bustling about their busy lives, and they're going here and going there. No one is even concerned at all or thinking at all the price that had to be paid and why it had to be paid. Because if he didn't pay it, every one of us were doomed eternally. So while man goes astray, the end of verse 6, but the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. While man doesn't care, God said, I care. Jesus said, I care. And I'll let everything fall on me when man doesn't even know how bad a shape they're in. That's love. Love gives up rights. Love sacrifices for other people. Love is never, ever self-seeking. It always seeks the benefit of others. And that's why love builds the church. This is why love will build a home. This is what keeps marriages intact and the church intact and relationships intact, because love never fails. It will never fail. And God will see to that, because it is God Himself. And when you're self-seeking, you got no concern and you will destroy. Well, keeping that in mind, come over to James if you would. Come back over to James chapter 4. Let me show you why this is so important to see that love doesn't seek its own. Because self-seeking is disastrous. It is disastrous. James chapter 4, look at verse 1. He said, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Now, I want you to see the one word, source. Let's look at the source of quarrels and conflicts. I don't care what quarrel there is. I don't care what conflict there is. I don't care if we're talking about two individuals, two friends, in the home, in the church. What is the source of it? The middle of verse 1. Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? The source of all conflicts and quarrels is self-seekers. You can count on it right now. Think of the last argument you had with your mate. Think about it. Think of the last argument you had with your friend. And you find in there what caused the argument. Somewhere, somehow, you're not getting what you want, when you want it, how you want it, what you think should be done. It's not being done your way. And so guess what? There begins this war being waged. And it starts on with inside of you and it goes to others. That's the source. Hostilities, angers, all of those things, you know what they come from? The lack of love. The lack of love. Now, what if I would choose to love? What would happen to quarrels and conflicts? If I would just give up my rights, I don't have to be right. I don't have to have it done my way. I don't need this at the moment. If I would do it for their benefit, what would happen to the conflict? What would happen to the quarrel? Well, when there's no wood on the fire, fire goes out. Proverbs teaches us that. Oh, we're going to be right back here. Just look back one chapter. Look back at chapter 3. Look at verse 14. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. Jealousy, We just saw that last week out of 1 Corinthians 13. Jealousy is also a sign of unloving. There shouldn't be jealousy existing among members of Christ. But he said, where there's bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart. Selfish ambition, self-seekers. I want it my way. I've got to have it my way. You know what? That's not God's way, and don't you lie against the truth. Because bitter jealousy and selfish ambition are not from God. It's from your source, is your pleasure. It's from you. You're the one that wants it this way. You're the one that wants it to be done this way. And so don't you lie against the truth. It's not coming from God. That's coming from you. And now we've got this selfish ambition, this bitter jealousy. Look at verse 15. Look what he calls it. This wisdom, it is a wisdom. You know what? You're getting it from another source. You're getting it from the wrong source. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above. God does not teach people to be selfish, does not teach people to be jealous, does not teach people to seek their own, does not teach people to be arrogant and boastful. God is not the source of any of that. What's the source? End of verse 15. But it is earthly. Yeah, it's according to man's standards. The leading psychologist, yeah, you need to learn to accept yourself and love yourself first. Where do you think that standard came from? Where do you think the standard, learn how to love yourself first before you can learn to love others? Who set that standard up? And how many people are buying into it? It's earthly. Notice, it's natural. Because it sees, you know, it's to my benefit. But notice the third word, demonic. Who is behind lovelessness? If it's not of God, it's of demons. You want to be selfishly ambitious, you know? You got ambitions for you and you don't want anybody taking that away? Well, it's going to lead to conflicts. It's going to lead to quarrels. You can mark it down right now, and you need to know it's earthly, it's natural, and it is demonic. And then he goes on to say in verse 16, for where jealousy and selfish ambition exists, there is disorder and every evil thing. Disorder. Disorder literally is a state of confusion. It's a state of confusion it's a disturbed mind. When you have jealousy and selfish ambition, when you have people seeking their own, they are going to be in disorder. They're going to be confused. They can't understand why things are the way they are. I mean, how many times have you talked to someone and you'll ask them, well, how you doing? Oh, you know, they got these problems in their life or this big problem exists. It is so confusing. If I just try to explain it to you, it's just too difficult to explain. No, it's not. It's real easy to explain. You're selfish. You're loveless. And that's why you're confused, and that's why you see the situation as so confusing, because you're coming from an earthly, natural, demonic sense, and everything is confusing. God, we're going to find out in 1 Corinthians 14, is not a God of confusion. So whenever you start seeing selfish ambition, whether that exists, there's going to be disorder. And he says, every evil thing. How many times when we wanted something our way and we didn't get it? And look how outlandish we go. It makes us angry. We say things. How many evil things crop up in one act of selfishness? I mean, think of the last time that you had a conflict with someone. Look at the evil thoughts. Evil words, evil actions. Oh, you're not only going to find a state of confusion, but you're going to see every evil thing too. That's a sign of lovelessness. You know, God knows what He's talking about. And He's trying to get you and I, brethren, to practice love. Choose to love instead of being selfish. Love doesn't seek its own. Well, come back over to chapter 4 again. Look at verse 1. What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? That's the source. Verse 2. You lust. There's a desire. You want something. You lust and do not have. So you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain. So you fight and quarrel. Why can't I have it? How dare you tell me no? Nobody tells me no. I want that so bad. I'll even commit murder to go get it. And we've known people. I've known people over the many years of preaching. I've known people that do crazy things, even to the point of murdering somebody, because they want something that individual is holding them back from. These desires come up. They are the lack of love. You fight and quarrel. You're envious. You can't get what you want, so you fight and quarrel. Think about our lives, brethren. How many times of our quarrels and fights, next time you get into a disagreement, I want you to think for just a second, hey, what are we fighting over? And you be honest in your heart. Don't you lie against the truth. It's coming from selfish ambition. It's coming because that's what you want, and they're not letting you have what you want. And you don't like it. And so you're going to fight and quarrel. Well, look at the end of verse 2. You do not have because you do not ask. You know why you don't get the desires? Because when people are selfish, the last thing they think about is praying. And the reason it doesn't work out is because you don't ask. Well, yeah, I do. I pray about it. Okay. Verse 3. You ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives so that you may spend it on your pleasures. Newsflash. God does not answer all prayers. Newsflash. God does not answer selfish prayers. I ask God to help. I ask God that this is something I'd like to have and everything. And He says, you ask with wrong motives. Love doesn't do that. Love never does that. Love is not self-seeking. And God is not a self-seeking God. And He will not answer self-seeking prayers. You can count on that right there. So you have a choice. You grab a hold of the love of God and stop seeking your desires, and you will have the favor of God. You grab a hold of the love of God and you stop being selfish, and you see if you don't start gaining strength and power in helping situations and helping things build up. You start seeking God, and it will save your soul, because you're loving as Jesus loved. So, verse 4. You adulteresses. Can you imagine calling the people of God adulteresses? I mean, am I looking at a crowd of adulteresses here? Well, anytime you go do it the world's way, you've just traded God for the world's way. That makes you an adulterer in the eyes of God. You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Yeah. You want to do it the world's way? You want to follow the leading psychologist? You want to follow some of these guys that get out there preaching and teaching to love yourself? Well, you know what? You be friends with them? You want to go after that? Well, you know, they're going to be hostile toward God because the things that they're teaching, the things that they're saying are in direct conflict with God. They're hostile to God's world. And they are hostile to God. You don't want to go that route. Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Whoa! To go from a child of God to an enemy of God, to go from a God who bore our sins, who carried our iniquities, who was pierced and crushed, and now to go back over and be the enemy of Jesus again? Oh, we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. I sure need Jesus' death on my account, and so do you. I don't want to be an enemy of God. Because all enemies of God will be at His feet. And they will bow down. And they will proclaim Jesus is Lord before they're sentenced to the eternal fires of hell. Because all mankind will know, I love you, and you refuse my love. But you will know, I love you, even with the sentence of condemnation. You and I need to make sure that sentence is not carried out on us. We need to practice love. We need to be more loving with one another. We need to be committed to loving. We need to be less feeling and more committed to sacrifice on behalf of my brothers and sisters. Why? Because He sacrificed for me. And there's the greatest reason of all. Love never fails. Never fails.